Hey guys, and welcome back to The Controversial Mom. I'm your host, Emily Jones, and this week is not going to disappoint in terms of, well, the level of controversy because we are focusing on the looming government shutdown. Now, most of us are following that pretty closely, and the fact that we are now headed into November of the government shutdown just really intensifies everything that's going on. So before I dig into the details and all the craziness that we're dealing with as a result of the government shutdown, I do want to start on somewhat comical topics related to the government shutdown. So there have been a couple of things that I know some of us have seen on social media, or if you've traveled recently, you've probably experienced some of this. But then there's another thing that I had put out on my personal Facebook page recently about the shutdown that just made me giggle, that I want to start with because, like I said, I think they're somewhat comical and we just have to find things to laugh about as we're dealing with all the craziness with the government shutdown. So the first thing is this PSA announcement from Kristi Noem. So if you've traveled recently, you've probably heard or seen this video commercial type thing that she put out specifically in airports that talks about the delays that you may potentially experience as a result of, you know, TSA agents not being staffed, security being backed up, air flight controllers not being fully staffed, like all these things that are happening with airports. The messaging of it has been rather funny to me. Democrats obviously don't think so, because in the midst of all of her announcements, she squarely puts this entire shutdown at the feet of the Democrats. In her message, she clearly says that as a result of the Democrat-led shutdown or the Schumer shutdown, you may experience XYZ. She squarely puts that on the Democrats, which I think is fair. But like I said, some of us, if you've traveled, probably heard or saw that. I recently traveled to Orlando and I heard it. And I laughed, of course, because I knew what was going on because it's been all over social media. But the other funny one that I experienced recently, I had emailed the White House, and I'm pulling up. I've got my notes over here, so I'm going to read exactly what they put out. But I had emailed the White House, the press secretary directly, or her team, requesting some information. And I was pretty shocked. I got an auto reply back from that account pretty quickly. And the messaging, and if you follow me on Facebook, I put this out there, so you've heard this, but if you don't follow me on Facebook, this is new to you. The message back says, due to staff shortages resulting from the Democrat shutdown, the typical 24/7 monitoring of this press inbox may experience delays. We ask for your patience as our staff work to field your request in a timely manner. As you await a response, please remember, this could have been avoided if the Democrats voted for a clean, continuing resolution to keep the government open. And then says some other stuff and they assign the White House press team. So it was extremely funny to me that everywhere you turn, Trump's administration is putting this squarely where it belongs, at the feet of the Democrats, because they are ultimately the reason that we're in this insane government shutdown. Now, this is the second longest shutdown we've had in our government. The longest happened during Trump's first term, and we're getting pretty close to exceeding that shutdown. I can't remember the exact days, but we're at roughly 30-ish some odd days for this shutdown, so we're getting pretty close. But why do I say this is a Democrat shutdown? Most of us are following this, but they have voted, at least at the time that I took all of my notes, 13 times to pass a clean continuing resolution. And the Democrats are not supporting it. So 13 times the Republicans, at least 13 times, Republicans have attempted to pass a clean CR to open the government, fund these programs, and keep everything moving forward. And the Democrats are just not cooperating. So the last I saw, which now this has been probably a week or so, and I've read a lot since then, I have forgotten a lot, so my numbers may not be 100% exact. We had to have 60 votes in the Senate to pass the budget. And last I saw, I think 53 had voted in favor of the clean CR. So that means we've got to have Democrats come over and vote with Republicans in order to pass the CR. So that's why it is a Democrat-led shutdown, because we have to have support from the Democrats to reach the required numbers in order to pass the CR. So yes, you'll go out on Twitter and all these other platforms and people will talk about how, well, Republicans have the majority. We do, but it's not that we just have to have a simple majority in order to pass the CR. We have to have 60 votes in the Senate, and we don't have 60 Republican senators. That's why we've got to have Democrat support. So that's, you know, roughly a week or so ago that I read all those numbers. So like I said, may have changed a little bit, but that's in essence what's got to happen. So the big thing that's in the news this week, because we are officially in November, and in my house, that means it's Christmas time. So the Christmas tree is going up today. I hope it's going up in y'all's house soon too. But that's not the point of today's conversation. We are focusing on the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or what everybody calls the SNAP program. And if you're old like me, you call it the food stamps program. So that's the big kind of hurdle we're dealing with right now when it comes to the government shutdown, that we have ran out of existing funding to keep the SNAP program open and sending out money to recipients. This program has been around for a very, very, very long time. Like I said, if you've been around for a while, you probably call it the SNAP or the food stamp program, because that's what it was called for a long time. But this program as a whole has been around since 1939, like longer than most of us have ever been alive. It started by FDR as part of the Great New Deal during the Great Depression. Obviously, that was a good time to start the program. And it's gone through some iterations over time. JFK in 64 actually is the one that passed the Food Stamp Act, and that's why it was called food stamps for a long time. And it's kind of gone through some rebranding over the past couple of decades, and ultimately we are where we are now in 2025 with the SNAP program. And this program is managed by USDA. So I pulled a lot of information from their website, and when I looked at it, the last report they had up was from May of 2025. And at that point, there were 42 million people that used this program. That's a whole lot of people. A lot of people. The big thing, I think, with Trump and this administration, whether you like him or not, one of the big things that I think we could all agree on is the level of transparency, or let's just say eye-opening revelations that have come under him, whether it was all the ridiculousness with USAID and these insane programs that we were funding all across the globe, or if it was the mass amount of waste in our federal government with all of these people that were air quotes working from home and doing nothing. Social Security and the Social Security program were just people that were 150 years old were receiving Social Security benefits. There's been a lot of eye-opening revelations in the Trump administration. Again, you don't have to love him. You don't have to necessarily agree with how they've gone about finding all this stuff. But we can all agree that our eyes have been opened to the amount of fraud, waste, and abuse that happens within our government. I think most of us knew it was there, but we didn't quite understand the extent to which it existed in a lot of these programs. And I think SNAP is just the next big one in that long list of eye-opening events. So the SNAP program, like I said, it's got about 42 million people that receive these benefits. I think this information that I've got is a little bit outdated, and I'll get into why in just a minute. But according to the USDA website, of those 42 million, roughly 2 million of those people are non-citizens. And that doesn't seem like a lot, because that means you've still got 40 million that are citizens, which I don't think is right. But of those 2 million non-citizens that are recipients of this program, that's roughly $6 billion, billion with a B, dollars that taxpayers are forking out to benefits to people that are in our country illegally. Now, here's why I say I don't think that number is accurate. Our government does not do a good job tracking the citizenship of people in our country. And here is why. Primarily, there's something called McKinney-Vento, and it deals with homelessness in our schools, or homeless children in our schools. It is a federal law that goes back to the 80s that says schools cannot ask for citizenship status of kids that enroll if they claim to be homeless. I won't get into all the details of it, but the point in that is our federal government has intentionally prevented entities from tracking citizenship status of, I'll say, people, whatever, that are in our government-run programs, agencies, whatever it may be. So I know for a fact that our public schools cannot tell you X percentage of our student population are here as non-citizens or illegally, whatever, because they are not legally allowed to collect that data. So that is why I say I don't think these numbers are accurate in terms of the non-citizenship, because I know our government does not allow a lot of agencies to track that. So I feel like this is probably some type of estimate or somebody just self-identify that they're not a citizen. I don't know. I just cannot imagine that 42 million people on this program, 40 million of those are citizens of our country. So I think the numbers are way underreported, but at a minimum, let's say they're right. That's still $6 billion of taxpayer money that's being used on non-citizens. That's a major problem. And here's the other thing. So Matt Walsh and multiple people have put out some numbers about this program. And their graphs, their reports talk about how this program has really skyrocketed over the past 5 years. And I saw a chart yesterday from somebody where essentially they show like it was around 20, 22 million people that were in the program up until 2020. And then when COVID hit, like the number skyrocketed up to where it is now in the 40 millions. I don't see that on the USDA website. Now, I don't know where they're pulling their information from. Maybe they're extracting data differently. I don't know. I just see the graphs and that's kind of it. So it may be that we're comparing apples and oranges, but what I see when I look at the USDA website and I pull the numbers, the amount of people that have been on the SNAP program since 2024 has really hovered at around the same number it is now. It's somewhere in the range of like 36, 37 million. So in 2014, there were 46 million people that were on the SNAP program. And then it dropped a little bit up until 2020. It was at 34 million. Obviously, COVID hit, the world changed. And we fast forward till in 2025, and we've got 42 million people using this program. So again, I don't know the difference between what Matt Walsh is pulling versus what I see on this USDA website. But what I see on the program or on their website is it's roughly hovered in the mid to upper 30 million range, which is a lot of people for a really long time. And that's a major problem because a lot of us see this as an abuse of the program because we've all seen on social media all these people that are getting on there and complaining about their food stamps or their SNAP program ending. And they're obese. They're talking about going to Taco Bell and spending $50 on burritos and all this other stupid stuff. That's where the frustration comes in with this 42 million people. Even if they're all legal, they don't need to be getting the SNAP benefits. They're just lazy and don't want to work. We need to fix that. We need to audit this program. But to bring this home a little bit, because obviously we can only do so much as a state to fight back on this. I did discover this handy dandy little website through the White House that focuses on nothing but the shutdown. So you can go to this, Google it. It's easier. Just Google White House government shutdown and it'll take you to their website. And it's monitoring all the impacts of the shutdown. And it's got this cool little map where you can go of the U.S. You can go to this map and click on each state and it will actually show you the economic impact all of the shutdown that the shutdown's having for the entire state. It's incredible information. You can actually click on like the learn more and it opens up a whole nother page with tons of content. And they have this like several different maps for different things. I looked at economic impact. It is phenomenal data. Like whoever's pulling this together, kudos to you guys because that's not an easy task. And it's super, super easy to use, super sharp, clean, updated. Go check it out. But I ended up on this website because I just found it curious. And I looked specifically at the SNAP impacts for our state. So in Alabama alone, because we care most about Alabama, right? There are roughly 736,000 people enrolled on the SNAP program. Of that, it's estimated that roughly 286,000 women and children. So this is definitely impacting our state. It's impacting the children and the women in our communities, which I'll get into in a minute. But this is a direct impact. What's happening in D.C. 100% is impacting our state. And that's where a lot of people really need to just kind of lean in on that. We had the ability to have a lot of impact as a state. It means we have to be vocal. It means we have to push back. Y'all have heard me say this before, and this is why. All this nonsense that's happening in D.C. is leaving 736,000 of our neighbors without SNAP benefits right now. And we're a poor state. So there's a lot of people that probably do need that in our state. And yet they're not receiving those benefits because of politics in D.C. So we've got to make sure that we're getting loud and we're pushing our elected officials to do the right thing in D.C. and they can put pressure on others. So the political piece in this, there's a couple of people that have actually been pretty interesting within D.C. on this topic. And the first one is John Thune, which I am no fan of John Thune, don't get me wrong, but I will give him credit on this issue. There have been a couple of people that came forward to say they were going to file legislation for more or less an individual funding bill to fund SNAP, because we're dealing with food. People need food to survive. We're dealing with a lot of like poor states that really and truly need this. So there's good intent behind it. But John Thune was very specific and he said, we're not doing individual bills. We're doing everything or nothing because we're not going to choose who wins and loses in this fight. We're going to pass a clean CR as a Republican majority and we're going to reopen the government. Because, and he had a great example, he said, because who's deciding that the military shouldn't be paid, but SNAP should be funded? Which was a really great point. I have to give him credit for that. Like I said, not a huge fan of his, but I agreed with him wholeheartedly on that. Who's going to choose what we fund and what we don't? And honestly, the more we fund individually on these things, the less leverage we have as a Republican Party to actually pass a clean CR and reopen the entire government. So kudos to John Thune. Never thought I'd say it, but I will. The other guy that's, I had never heard of this guy, and I'm not quite sure how I feel about him, but his name is Clay Higgins out of Louisiana, and he put out some really stupid comments recently on X. I don't know the full context behind what led him to say it, but essentially he made a comment about if you're receiving SNAP benefits and you're not able to fully stock your pantry for a month at a time, then you need to stop smoking crack, I think was the comment. Something like that. I don't really understand what he's trying to, well, I know what he's trying to imply. I don't understand what he thinks he's gaining from that because it's just a dumb and inappropriate comment. But there was something he put in the tweet that really struck a nerve with me. And again, this comes back to Alabama. He made the comment that on average, families get roughly $4,200 a year through SNAP benefits. And he believes that should be able to stock your pantry. Properly stock your pantry. That properly is the word that I want to focus on because there's a major issue with that word. And I'm going to bring this back to Alabama. In the state of Alabama, if you get SNAP benefits, you are limited on what you can and cannot buy. That's across the country, right? Like it prohibits you from buying cigarettes with SNAP, but you can buy a 2-liter Coke, right? In Alabama, here's the issue. You cannot take your SNAP benefits to the grocery store and buy a whole rotisserie chicken because for whatever dumb reason, Alabama does not recognize a cooked chicken as being a benefit of the SNAP program. Now, you can buy raw chicken, but you can't buy a rotisserie chicken. And Donna Givens out of Mobile, Baldwin area, I can't remember which county, is filing legislation to change that. Christina McGinnis, who's running for Ag Commission, is trying to change that. And I think that it needs to happen. I mean, rotisserie chickens are great. They're nutritious. They're proteins. It's way better than getting a bag of chips. So why are we allowing SNAP benefits for chips and candy bars and Cokes, but not a chicken because it's cooked? And Donna Givens recently talked about this, and she had a great example that I think a lot of people are missing with this. So you can buy chicken and go home and cook it with your SNAP benefits. But you cannot buy a cooked chicken because it's cooked. But if you are a very low income home, and let's just say things get really bad and your power gets cut off, having chicken that you have to go home and cook is not helping you because you don't have a way to cook it. So what do? You buy chips, you buy candy, you buy highly processed canned foods that you then eat cold because you don't have a way to cook it or warm it up. Whereas if you can get a rotisserie chicken, you can go home and you get a nutritious meal and it's warm and it just, you feel better. I mean, who would not want to have a warm meal when you don't have power and it's dark and cold in your home? So that is a major gap in the coverage, the benefits within Alabama. And that's what makes this comment from Clay Higgins just really hit a nerve with me, is states are limiting what people can use these benefits for. And we're doing some stupid stuff here in Alabama. So we need to fix that. The other thing that I will say in all of this with the shutdown, is painful as it is, as frustrating as it is, there are a couple of good things that I have found in this whole saga. And one of those is our local communities. I mean, y'all know me, I'm all for local communities supporting our families and getting the government out of our business. And I'm seeing that with what's happening with this shutdown. So it's unfortunate that the SNAP benefits are stopping and all these other benefits are, you know, on the verge of collapse. But the beautiful thing in all of this is so many locals in our community are stepping up to help their neighbors. So I get an email almost every single week that talks about different agencies or different organizations in the community that are helping to feed people that are in need. Our church is collecting pantry items. We have a little box that's outside the church for families to go and just get what they need. And then there's a local women's Republican group here in town that's doing a diaper drive. So it's diapers, wipes, formula, all that. It's kind of like the WIC program because WIC's been impacted for weeks now. So that's the beautiful thing in all of it, is in my mind, we're kind of reverting back to decades ago where people were in need in the local community, whether it's the church, whether it's just nonprofits, whether it's just people that are in a position to help, are actually taking care of their neighbors and telling the government, stay out of it, we got it. And it's painful and we're still not doing enough. But I do think people are starting to recognize, like, no, this is our responsibility locally to take care of our people. So it's painful. The shutdown's very difficult for people and I hate it. But there are some really big wins hidden in this situation if we just take the time to really focus on it. So for me, I'm really excited to see our community stepping up and taking care of those around us that are truly in need. And we need to do much more of that. Or at least starting it. And for me, that's a huge thing. And I guess that's the controversial part in all of it, is that we can all agree to just tell the government, pound sand, we're going to take care of our people the way they need to be taken care of. So as always, guys, I appreciate you joining me this week to talk about the controversial conversation of ending the SNAP benefits, or at a minimum, let's just audit it and let's see who these 42 million people are, what they're doing, and if they truly deserve to have those benefits. Thanks for joining, guys. I'll see you next week.